With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
If you're interested in Tesla, don't miss Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast hosted every week by me, Ryan McCaffrey, a longtime Tesla owner and super fan. On episode 200, I had Elon Musk on for an hour. On episode 220, I talked to Tesla's chief designer, and I'm also there at every big Tesla event covering it in person. Ride the Lightning recaps and analyzes everything happening with the world's biggest EV automaker each week. Hear about the latest Cybertruck developments, the next-gen Roadster, the Model S Plaid, plus the newest updates to the Model 3, X, Y, and more. New episodes have been dropping every Sunday since 2015, so jump in and enjoy. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast service, or check it out at patreon.com/Tesla Podcast. That's Ride the Lightning, the Tesla unofficial podcast.
Well, we talked to professional racer, three-time Le Mans driver, Trans Am champion, Chris Dyson, of course, of the Rob Dyson fame. That's his father. We're getting into the nuts and the bolts of the upcoming professional Trans Am race I'm doing, because he'll be in it as well. Get into that. We'll talk a little lightweight BMWs, and we'll talk about some Cobra kits and regulations. But first, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal when it comes to great rates on insurance for everything? Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent. Get it on. Welcome to CarCast, Matt Kroll. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hey,
over there.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing all right. Are you the buzz of Amelia Island getting to you, coming down a little bit? Certainly the auction with the Toyota 2000 GT, which became the most expensive Japanese car and the most expensive, I think, Japanese car at auction. And yeah, it was exciting. The Shelby Toyota 2000 GT that we talked about.
Yeah, it's one of those. Oh, those cars always look really good in photographs, but when you get up on them, you go, oh, they're kind of small. And they're also sort of gutless. I mean, like 135 horsepower stock.
Yeah.
That thing's probably cranked up to like 210 or something.
With all the buzz of, you know, the way the algorithms work on the internet is once you start looking up something, right, it starts showing you ads and content, and Facebook is like, oh, you like the 2000 GT, or if you like the whatever bicycle, you like the whatever. Mm-hmm. So I noticed that Bobby Rahal has a Toyota 2000 GT. And he won best in class at Amelia Island.
Wow, red one.
A red one. He's got a red one. So he had one, and he's been restoring it. Mm-hmm. Just so happened at the same year at Amelia that the Shelby one was going up for auction. And he just, he just won best in class.
I told you before that, the estimate at 2.7 to 3.5, I said, that's pie in the sky.
Yeah.
There's no way. But I said if it cracks too, that's a big deal for the Japanese car market.
Yeah.
Now, that car's $1 million now in the street clothing. So, it's hard to tell what it means for the Z guys. because that car's $1 million as it is. But, yeah. You know, for the lovers of Japanese cars, it's a good day. The other car, I told you, the car that was bought right, man, and I told you to keep an eye on it, was the Trans Am Camaro two-frame.
Yeah, at RM had that one.
Yeah, that was the... God, I'm trying to think, Peerless chassis, whatever. Beautiful restoration. Like, it just looked good. The car looked good. The race car looked good. And I told you before the auction, those cars just have never gone up in value. I think it's because they're tube frame. It's American. It's tube frame. It's whatever. But it's, you know, big BBS center locks. It's got fuel injection. It's a real race car with a bunch of history and probably a $300,000 restoration on it. Mm-hmm. Went for $117,000.
Yeah,
that's if you're looking,
yeah,
to get into the market on like vintage race cars. You know, everyone thinks, 85. That's not vintage. Well, it's coming on 40 years. You know,
yeah.
Those two frame Trans Am cars, they're just not popping.
Yeah. Like, so that's a good buy.
Everything is popping around them, even Indy cars with some history and that kind of stuff. But the NASCAR stuff and those tube frame Trans Am like mid-80s cars just not moving. It costs a lot to get one race ready. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you just get one sort of as is, you're going to have to take it down to the tube frame and straighten it out and powder coat it. And, well, you know, I've been through that, but
yeah,
that car was nut and bolt gone through, looked beautiful, had kind of a cool, like Levi's livery and stuff like that. Had some pretty decent race history, not big races, but a couple, definitely some podiums and some drivers you've heard of. At 117, that's less than half the price of that restoration.
Yeah, right. You couldn't.
And you couldn't build it. If you want to get a car and, you know, go to Laguna Seca for the Rolex Historics, that's the kind of car will get you into that race for well under $150.
Right.
I mean, that's well bought. And there's a few of them, you know, they're out there. Some pop up every once in a while, mm-hmm. various history, some different, you know, makes. And there's, you know, there's a Z version of it that I have. There's an Oldsmobile version of it that I have. There's, you know, Chevy. There's some, you know, now, you know, the Saline Mustangs or the, as I should say, the Roush stuff, you know, Mustangs and Capris are way up.
Yeah, those are going.
But those Camaros, they just haven't popped. That was probably about the body that my Newman car had on it when I got it.
The Newman one is, you know, 87, was it?
I don't know. 88, 89.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, you're not going to find the Z. You might find an Oldsmobile. You might find, like, a Chevy Beretta.
Yeah.
In that, with the seat all the way back. It's an inside joke for us.
Yeah.
But, I mean... the Camaros are out there. They look pretty. They look good in race trim. They work, and that's a good way to get into that market.
I mean, not all of them will qualify for Monterey, but you will get them into other vintage races, and you know, only because they take 550 cars and it's getting very competitive now. There's over 1,000 cars that apply and you kind of get selected. But that could get you in, that gets you close, that certainly gets you into other vintage events. And you're right, for 100 and change, it's a pretty cool little race car to get into.
It's a lot of car for that money, and you have to be sort of ready to drive that much car, but it is a lot of car. And that car would probably get in. I think, I don't know if it's, trying to think, had a couple of drivers you've heard of, ran two seasons, you know, complete seasons.
Yeah.
Had like three first place finishes or something. Like it's a livery that people recognize. Like, you'd probably get in with that car.
Yeah.
But I told you, those things just aren't moving. They will move, because if the Roush version the Capri and the Mustangs are, I don't know,
yeah,
well over five now, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're
say,
in the, then, they're in the 5 to 7, yeah, 6 to 8
the range. The big money now. One was the Tommy Kendall car, right? That was a championship car. And that one went for, I don't remember, what it was, seven something. That was a few years ago.
I think sort of high sixes. But Chris Dyson is a professional racer and a Trans Am champion, is going to join us soon. We got plenty to talk to him about. What else is going on in the car world?
You know, one of the things that that just kind of got passed in the political world, a little political good news, is, you know, about, I don't know, 4 years ago, SEMA was lobbying to get this bill passed for the, I know the actual term now, the sort of the kit cars to become turnkey and legal. The, like the Superformance Cobras, right? You can go down, you can buy one of those cars. You know, you got to have the engine and transmission sort of separate, and then somebody mates them together for you, and you kind of walk through this process of trying to make it street legal. And there was a bill that was submitted a while ago that would allow companies like Superformance to offer it as a turnkey car. You can walk into a showroom, give them your money, fire up the car, and go home. And it finally got through. It was approved years ago, but now it finally was whatever. It was attached as a fine print of some other bill that got approved. So the rules are it has to be emissions legal, right? So whatever modern version of the engine, emissions legal. You can only make 325 of them per manufacturer per year. So Superformance can make 325 cars. But the cars also have to be based off of an existing car at least 25 years old. So this isn't this – I don't know. This probably doesn't help some kit car companies that are making something unique like Factory 5.
Or Ariel Atom.
Yeah, maybe Ariel Atom. It doesn't help. That's a very good example. But it would help Superformance if you want to buy a Cobra or you want to buy a Daytona, you know, the coupe or something like that. Yes, you can. I mean, it probably even opens it up, allows Superformance to go, oh, everything's custom built. Now they can go, well, we're going to build five. We're going to put them in our showroom, and whoever wants one can just buy it and we'll ship it to you, or you come and get it. And then whatever, we'll build another one when it sells. So they could always keep some inventory if they wanted to. But I don't know how much further it goes, but would it allow somebody like Superformance to go, oh, we're going to just send one of these to Galpin. They're going to put it in their showroom and let them sell it, you know, as like consignment on a dealer. Because now it is a turnkey street legal car that you can register in 50 states. So and it's kind of a big move. It's kind of a win for the, you know, for the car community to be able to do that. All right. So you're not going to get your, you know, your 427 big block with no cats and whatever. You get a street legal, emissions legal version of it, but at least you can go in and get it. You know, it's kind of a good
win. Yeah, maybe,
you
know, and maybe, I don't know, philosophically, maybe guys overbuild those things a little bit. I mean, you got this kit car, it weighs 2,300 pounds. You're going with the Roush big block with the fuel injection and the side pipes and, you know, straight exhaust. And at some point, you got this 2,300-pound vehicle with an engine that's got, you know, 686 horsepower, and it's louder and shit. It's hot.
And you're struggling to keep the engine cool.
Right. You know, and you kind of – you go, hey, it's – sun shining on a Saturday, you want to take the Cobra, it's like, let's just get in the Camry.
Right.
I don't want to deal with it.
Or you get the one that just has a turnkey Coyote crate engine with 480 horsepower and it fires up. It sounds great, reliable, doesn't overheat, and fast as shit.
Yeah, I've never really thought about it, but I think sometimes guys go for the brass ring when they build those cars, and then they kind of build them right out of any kind of practical usage because they're just so loud and such a handful. And, you know, honestly, probably dangerous to guys that aren't used to it, that much horsepower to weight ratio and whatnot. I see here that BMW is going to do a lightweight M2 and M4.
Yeah.
And it made me think of the lightweight M3s from back in the early, mid-90s. As well, And it's funny. I feel like we saw a few of those pop up in different places at auction and things like that, bring a trailer, that kind of stuff, a couple of years back.
Yeah, yeah.
Haven't seen one in a while.
When they sold off some of Paul Walker's collection of Barrett Jackson, I think he had two of the E36 lightweights.
Mm-hmm.
I recall like one he drove and one he didn't really drive.
Look, I love the M3. I like that style. By the way, M3s in general, including that body style, are going up. The E30s are...
E30s, E36, E46, like they're all those... Generations.
The E30s are starting to go past $100,000, and they're going to drag up everything below it. And I always thought those lightweights were kind of cool. They made a limited number of them. But I haven't seen one pop up in a couple of years, and I'm wondering if people are going, these things are on the move. I think I'm going to sit on this one for a while.
You're right. They were hot for a minute. I think the Paul Walker car sparked some interest. It brought up values. A few people moved them on Bringer Trailer quickly, and now everyone's kind of sitting on them.
Mm-hmm.
But to your point, somebody was talking with the new CEO of BMW, and they said, you know, what kind of hot news, salacious news can you give us? And he was saying the next generation M2 will be revealed at some point this year, so it'll be a 23 model, and a lightweight variant of the M4, which is currently available. So that could be kind of interesting.
I think people should sign up for those cars, and I think that's a good collector car. And I do not know, Chris, you can take a look. The last E36 lightweight M3 to go across, but we're probably getting into the 80s and 90s at this point.
Probably on Bring a Trailer, you'll find them. You'll see them white with the flag, the little checkers on the front fender.
I always felt I was looking at one of those at a dealer for a while, and you know, it's got the radio delete, probably the cloth seats.
Like new when it was coming out?
It was probably a couple of years old.
Shopping around for an M3, and they're like, yeah, this one's $40,000, and if you want it without a stereo, it's $45,000.
I always felt like when you make something the lightweight edition and you put the checkered, or you put the M-colored checkered flag on the back and stuff, it's great that you carved out 218 pounds from this thing, but I'd like a little horsepower bump.
Yeah.
Things at 240. I'd like to see you get to like 263 or something. Like, I like the notion of we've lightened this one and we tweaked the cams. We're getting a little more out of it.
Yeah.
Even if it's symbolic.
Right. And you kind of want something other than just like exhaust and pulleys. Like, you want to know that something's a little unique. Like, it's got a unique, like you said, cams or intake manifold is a little more special to that car, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to define it differently, which some car companies were starting to get into. And you think about even in the Mustangs, like when the Boss 302 came out in the 2000s, they're like, oh, this has cams and it has an intake manifold that are unique to the Boss.
How bad do those old Mustangs look now?
Yeah.
I mean, not old. I mean, 2006 or something.
Yeah, like 2005, 2006, when that came out, it was like, oh, we're bringing it back. It's the new retro body style and whatever. And
how kind of bloated. And
they were big. So big. I had one in 2005 when it came out. I had one. And you know, I'm on the phone with my brother, and I'm like, yeah, these cars are, I don't know, 300 and something horsepower now. And I'm like, it doesn't feel fast, though. It feels big. And I was like, it just feels big and heavy.
Well, and they've come a long way in a short period of time. Chris Dyson, professional racer, man's done the 24 hours of Le Mans three times, by the way. So I'm always interested in that. He's won a lot of championships and Trans Am and beyond is now with us. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Hi, Adam. Hi, guys.
Hello. How are you?
And, of course, Rob Dyson, his father, anyone who listens to this show wouldn't definitely know who Rob Dyson was. Good to see you. I'm very interested in speaking to you because I got a Trans Am race coming up, and I'm wondering if you're going to be there, or if not, can I just pick your brain?
I think you're going to race against him.
Adam, I will be there. The whole Trans Am National Series is going to be at Laguna, and thrilled to have you out there on the grid with us.
Yeah, I'm it's really I did one professional race at Willow a few years back, and it was really just the most fun I've ever had in a car. I just loved it. I love those cars. I love the sequential shifting. I'm so used to driving vintage cars. It was a nice it felt like a nice step up toward a sort of normalcy. Like it was like, it's still a crazy race car, but it has some enough modern day accoutrements that it felt stable and dialed in. And it just felt like a less hair raising experience, even though you're going that much faster.
Well, there's some of the fastest cars racing in the world right now, certainly the most powerful ones. And, you know, as you said, they've got some of the niceties, all the modern safety equipment. We're on really sticky Pirelli tires and have a lot more downforce than when you would have driven the cars a few years ago. You know, you're sitting in the mid 800 horsepower range and you don't have traction control. So it's still very much a driver's series. And that's what makes it so rewarding. And it's what makes the car so thrilling to race.
Well, you know, when I did it at Willow Springs, they got that big turn 8, and you go into that turn about 153, 155, somewhere in that range, and all we've spoken about it, but you get a lot of downforce that keeps you on the track through that big turn. But I was thinking about Laguna Seca, and I was like, well, Where's the downforce going to benefit you on that track? Because there's a straight, but then you almost stop to turn in the Andretti at the end, and then you get back. You know, you get up to speed at the top of the hill, but then you drop into the corkscrew. Like where does the aero come in on a track like that, or does it?
All the braking zones. You know, you have enormous downforce on the car at the end of the straights. So that's probably where you're going to get the most benefit. The cars do have a little bit more low speed downforce than they did. We've been allowed to add aerodynamics the last few years, but not to any detriment to the racing. You know, through the left-hander after the corkscrew and the section right before the last corner, where you're going, you know, over 100, 120 miles an hour, the aero grabs hold of it pretty decently. But like you said, it's on its tiptoes through some of the slower things.
What will you be driving that weekend?
So I'll be in the TA1 category with you, the TA class, re-racing my number 20 the Mustang. We had some good success there last year, and the series was back in full force, and should be a decent field of cars out there.
Chris, can you walk us through a little bit of the technical aspect behind the car, maybe certainly how it's changed since then?
I did it 5 years ago.
Right. You're running the big V8s. You said about 800 plus horsepower. Is everybody running like sequential transmissions now? And like, what's your setup?
So everyone right now has all shifted over to the sequential transmissions. The weight is unchanged from when Adam would have raced with us. Everyone's making more horsepower than they were. I mean, we're obviously rev restricted to 8,600, but everyone's been doing some work in the engine departments. We've been adding more aerodynamics. The new tires, you know, we spent last year developing the 18-inch wheel configuration for the car. So we've got the benefit of Pirelli's most recent experience around the world in Formula One and all their GT racing going into the latest tire, which is just a joy to race on. A lot more stability, a lot more low speed performance, just more grip, more power, more downforce. What could be wrong with that?
Is there a rule now in place for the sequentials that they're all still with a stick, or do some people have a paddle?
No, it's all hand operated.
It's all
still
hand operated. Okay.
Yeah, it's not. You know, you still have to execute the shifts both up and down. And I think that's one of the strong points of Trans Am as a driver series. It's not computer aided. You know, you've still got to do the work.
Is the let me give you a plug, by the way, before we get too far down the road. Jim Weed by Altwell, hemp-infused sports nutrition beverage to help you helps take your workouts to the next level. And let's talk about that. How did you get involved with the company?
So actually, it's Adam, it's a friend, a friend of yours, a Trans Am legend and a dear friend of mine, Greg Pickett. He and his family are behind Altwell, which is the parent company who was featured on my car last year. This is their latest offering into the beverage market, which they were massively successful in with Muscle Milk.
All right.
And yeah, so it's a really...
Yeah. Pickett drove the Muscle Milk Mustang, I think, in the race I drove in and happily got off the course for a moment just to let me get up a space or two, as I recall. But sorry, continue.
Yeah, so this is an exciting beverage product that they've developed. You know, obviously using all their know-how from the flavor and beverage world, and it's in an emerging space. You know, the CBD hemp infused products, I think, are one of the biggest growth industries. You know, certainly I think it's going to be a smash hit, and it's really built around the greatest, you know, nutritional elements. You know, geared around athletes. It's got clean caffeine energy, the highest quality CBD products in it, formulated not artificially but naturally, and it's just been released, and we're thrilled to be bringing it out to market and shedding some light on the brand of Gymweed.
You can go to altwell.com to find out more. So you brought up tires. And I've been thinking a fair bit about the tires. So from back when I ran last, first the tires were cold, and I spun off the track in a practice. It wasn't even, I don't know, warm up or something. I got about a third of a lap into a race.
Yeah, it was like first.
I didn't do anything. I barely got blipped the gas, and the car just sailed off the track. But anyway. I was embarrassed.
The camera says otherwise.
I had the car tracking straight when I got into it. It just, anyway, then that made me nervous. Then later on toward the end of the race, I started noticing the tires getting really greasy, and I had to turn and really turn, you know, up at the horseshoe at Willow. And I just started noticing it was like sliding all over the place. And so I thought, well, they kind of told me this is what the tires are going to do. How have they eliminated any of the end of the race tires feeling greasy, or is that still part of it?
Well, yeah, the new tires and the new construction, Adam, particularly the new compound, has a lot less degradation over a run. So really the only difference in the lap time that you're going to see is largely the fuel weight burning off. As you know, we start with 35 gallons of fuel in the cars, and they are, by the end of the race, you're fairly light. So you start to see that correlation in the lap time to a far greater extent than previously. And like I said, because the tires got a stiffer construction, the pressure variation isn't quite as high. So that means more grip. It means a more consistent contact patch, and therefore, you know, more rubber on the road.
All right, I'm going to ask you to commit to something. Every time I do something like this, I find some guy who knows what he's doing. In this case, it's you. And I go, hey, during practice, can I just follow you around for a couple of laps? And they go, yeah, sure thing. It never works out. It never happens. The person gets in the car. They take off. I never see him again. I'm out in the middle. I don't know the line. It's a shit show. Can you commit to letting me follow you around for a couple of laps during a practice just to see the line?
I'm sure we can figure something out, Adam. And obviously you've got one of the best teammates in the mix with Kent Thwaites, and you've got two Showtime cars out there. So if it's not me, I'm sure it'll be Ken, but we'll definitely get you up to speed.
Yeah. I don't trust this Ken character.
I don't know. You're going to have to make a speech at the driver's meeting going, who's going to commit to letting Corolla follow you around for a couple of laps?
I want to raise your hand.
There's a signed book in it for you or something.
You just got to remember where to break, Adam.
Yeah, well, I don't know, because I've got a lot of laps on that track, but not at that speed at the end of the straightaway. Yeah. And then also the line after the corkscrew, never figured it out. It's everyone drives through the middle of the turn. Some guys go up a little and drop down. Some people just kind of stay down and tight. I can never.
And we've noticed differences in the vintage racing, the different types of cars, and as well, like they seem to be taking different lines. So good luck.
Yeah. Well, that's why I need to follow Ken or Chris.
Hey, Chris, how many laps are you guys going to do at Laguna Seca, or how long is this session?
So it's every Trans Am race is 100 miles. So I think Laguna maybe runs about 2.5 miles. So we'll have to do the math on that. But
I think it's 2.23.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I want to say we did like, I want to say we were sort of 30 something laps last year when we did the race. And it ran, the race last year ran with minimal yellows, and we've had a lot of good consistent races where they've been flag to flag green.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite tracks to race these Trans Am cars at?
You know, it's kind of like wake me up and tell me where I am, and I'm usually pretty happy, Adam. I mean, these cars are so much fun. It's not really a cliche to say, but they're fun everywhere. And we hit some terrific circuits on the calendar. I mean, we started off in Sebring. We're going to be in Charlotte, Atlanta before we come out to California. We hit up Sonoma, Laguna, and then we're at some of the great tracks over the summer. We're at Road America, which is one of my all-time favorites. We're at Watkins Glen. You know, the series has put together a really terrific schedule for us. And these cars are just fearsomely great everywhere.
Yeah, I imagine Sonoma would be a really fun track to race these Trans Am cars. Radio in the helmet. I had some difficulty last time in that I brought a helmet with no radio. And this year, I'm committed to getting a setup in my helmet with a radio so I can, you know, so I can communicate with the team. But I don't know what that system looks like. Do you have earbuds? Are there speakers that are in the helmet? Like, what? How do you run it?
So, I mean, the cars are loud, Adam. I mean, these are properly heavy metal cars, you know, 100 plus decibels. I'd recommend getting some decent earplugs. If you could get a mold done, that's usually the best. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, some folks use the over-ear headphones, but I think having the benefit of the ear protection with the earplugs, with the in-earbud speaker is probably the best.
Yeah. Yeah, they're super loud. I don't think there's any communicating when you're on the throttle. Even if you have good earbuds, is that correct?
Yeah, you generally you know, and you've got a great crew on your car, Gary Celix. He knows when to talk to you, and he knows it's probably not great to talk to you in the middle of the highest speed corner or in the middle of a braking zone.
Unless you're doing something wrong.
Hey, Tommy Kendall told me once remember Tommy used to do that show called like Test Drive?
Test Drive, yeah, it was a good show.
And we went to Willow. I've done it with him a few times.
Maybe you're doing the AMGs, doing the AMG car?
No, we drove like the Dodge Magnum wagons.
Oh, yeah, the wagons.
that was
a minute ago.
A part of my wagon like fell off while we were driving. Like, I don't even know what it was, but the point is Tommy started going nuts in this souped up Marauder, you know, wagon. And you talk back and forth the whole time.
Yeah, it was Magnum wagon.
Magnum wagon, I call it. It's a Marauder.
The Marauder is... I think there was a different one.
It's a throwback.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said to me, you know, Adam, I always do the show with people and they're very chatty, but once the car breaks loose, they zip it. And he said, you never shut up. He said, even when the car's sliding off the track, you're still talking.
Just talking about it. Just talking about it.
I said, well, what's one got to do with the other, Tommy? I can talk and slide off the track in a Magnum. Yeah. And then we went to Fontana.
Yeah.
And maybe then we're in some sort of AMG something.
I think because the series got sponsored by the car manufacturer. So Chris, you mostly listen. You don't really talk to your crew, or how much talking do you do? What kind of feedback or information are you supposed to give them, if anything?
You know, we don't have pit stops in our series, so you know, I will occasionally just ask mostly for the gaps to the competitors, kind of where we stand on lap times in the race, and you know how much time to go. I try to keep it you know, strictly business in the race and try to keep the area, the radio as clear as possible. In practice, I'm more vocal. You know, in practice, you've got a chance to talk about changes you want to make and you've got limited time to make adjustments. So you're given more feedback. But in the race, I'm much more down to business.
Are you monkeying around with the sway bar? Because when I did it, there was a clear tube that went to a nipple that was attached to the adjuster for the sway bar. And I was just looking at it and I went, hydraulic sway bar. Yeah. What is this?
How is that possible?
How does that work? Later on, I was informed, I think after the race, that that was just a holder for the drink tube. I was like, there's no hydraulic fluid in this tube. How am I going to – someone's got to bleed this tube. But it's just where they made a stop for the drinky tube.
Yeah.
They could have told me about that before the race.
They could have told me about that too. They could have labeled it.
Are you, are you monkeying with your sway bar throughout?
Yeah, so Adam, it's kind of nice to have the adjustability in the car. We've got adjustable front and rear sway bars, and usually what you can do is, you know, you can make an adjustment to the roll bar for full tanks or maybe after a yellow when the tires aren't quite up to operating temperature to give the car a little bit more chance to roll or more support on the front end or the rear end. You may have more push at the beginning of the race. If that's the case, you may want to stiffen up the rear bar, soften up the front bar. And as the race goes on, the fuel starts to burn off. You may want the front bar stiffer to give yourself more support on the rear wheels.
Is there a cheat sheet or sort of a rule of thumb? Should we going, hey, around lap 10, maybe, you know, quarter turn here? Because otherwise,
yeah,
it's a lot of... It's a lot more butt feel. You got to figure out what's going on. I otherwise don't touch it, right?
I think ultimately it's a fine tuner. You know, it's not going to turn the car upside down. So, you know, it is one of those nice tools to have, as well as your brake balance. Those are the things where we can make in-car adjustments during the race.
Sounds like you got a lot of shit in there. Front and rear sway bars, brake balance, talk to the guy on the radio.
Well, I think...
All the stuff you don't normally do when you're racing, the vintage racing. You just go out and we don't even know if you go off the track. We're usually getting a beer. So, we don't even know until somebody says, hey, Crolla went off the track, the announcer.
Yeah.
And then we're going to like, Sean, put down your hot dog. Go get Adam off the track.
Well, I guess I'll see if I can figure it out before the race and let whoever's doing the spotting on the radio hopefully tell me when to dial it in.
Yeah, or if during the practice we can go, hey, maybe lap 12, try this, give a quarter turn, and then, you know, lap 20, maybe try this. Who knows? I don't know if there's sort of a way to sort of, I don't know, preemptively figure out like what might be a good move.
Is Tommy Dreese going to be out there?
At best I can tell, he will be there. I mean, Tommy and I are pretty regularly in contact. We have a standing countdown. As soon as we leave the race that we were just at, we usually start counting down the days to the next one. And we're, I think, already at 1 week out from our next one in Charlotte. But he'll definitely be there. He was a runner-up in the series last year, and I know he's trying to run for points this year as well.
I wonder... You know, they're also doing a vintage race out there that weekend, which is fun because you got the modern Trans Am cars, but you get to look at some of the cool old pony cars from back in the day and many other categories. I was taking a look at the sort of vintage rundown. They seem to have quite a few run groups out there. I know Tommy has some vintage stuff, too, and I'll be curious if he brings any of that out. And
Do you run any vintage cars, Chris?
Pretty rarely, to be honest. I got asked to do, the SVRA had this V-Rock a few years ago, so I got to drive some really cool stuff. I drove an old Mustang, but I don't have anything in my stables that I race actively now.
Well, we have a 510 2.5 Trans Am car.
Do you really?
Yes.
Do you?
A few. One, well, a BRE 510, as a matter of fact. But we're thinking about maybe bringing... You know, the B sedan 510 alpha guys are always like, hey, come on out, bring a car. And I'm like, yeah, that would be really cool. But we're just trying to figure out how the schedule works, mm-hmm. because obviously the priority is going to be the big Trans Am car. But if there's some space in there or works out scheduling wise, it'd be fun to putt around in that 510 too. Or maybe that'll throw me off completely.
Yeah. it's funny though, Adam. I think the seat time matters, and you know, my dad actually started in a 510. We've got a replica of his car that he started racing back in 1974.
Really?
Shop. Yeah. Yeah, I'll take some pictures and show you.
Yeah, show me, because we've got a couple of BRE 510s mm-hmm. and the different Drummer 510.
Which was Greg Sorrentino?
Sorrentino car. Yeah, but some real 2.5 Trans Am series cars, one with a brass tag even, which is very rare for the Trans Am series. And fun as hell to drive, completely different experience than the big TA stuff. But maybe equally as exciting, because you just have to go balls out all the way. They're such momentum cars. And a really fun run group, too. Really competitive, equal kind of run group.
And guys good dudes in that group. Good people in that group. It's really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't attract the douchebags. I don't know. There's something about 510 guys. Yeah. They're humble.
Yeah.
But they're fun and they're good, you know, and they're fast in those cars. They always do those. They'll do Laguna Seca the same lap time is the big Trans Am, you know, Mustangs and Camaros and stuff like that of the same era. So, you know, it's just tighter. It's a little less horsepower intensive, and those guys can drive. So hopefully we'll bring the different Drummer 510 and you can reminisce and definitely show me some of those pictures. Chris, let me give you a plug. Go to altwell.com and check out Jim Weed by Alt Well, and then we'll see on the 20th. Well, I'm trying to think when we're out there.
I think it's 22 through 24. We're gonna head up. I think we're gonna be up there Thursday night because you got to get up bright and early for that driver's meeting.
Yeah, I need you to take notes for me at that driver's meeting.
You can just Zoom, maybe FaceTime from the meeting.
well, Adam, we're really looking forward to having you up there. I think you're really going to like the paddock there. You know, I have to say I'm grateful for the connection, and obviously grateful for Ashley Van Dyke, who I think is a friend of the show, friend of yours.
Oh yeah,
for kind of bringing us together. She's the reason I'm in the series, and she's created a lot of excitement there. And she'll make if whatever notes that I can't take, she'll take for you.
Perfect.
Well, thanks, buddy. I look forward to seeing you, and this is going to be fun. Chris Dyson, thanks, my friend.
Okay, Adam, take care, guys.
Yourself. All right. Well, that's good.
It's gonna be a fun event for sure.
Oh yeah, Sonny's gonna be buzzing around on his electric bike.
I know we're kind of running out of time. I just wanted to say congratulations to our good friend Pete Brock. He was inducted into the Motorsports Hall of Fame. There was a big ceremony the other night, and you know, you and I were just on the phone talking about Pete and how much we love Pete and how much he's done in the industry, just beyond, you know, Shelby and, you know, his hang gliding experience and everything else. And I saw some of the displays that were there to honor Pete with all of his memorabilia and his jackets and an old helmet. And I also love him because
he's not in the Racers Hall of Fame.
He is now.
Well, he is now.
And, you know, he's got a scarf. He dresses like Speed Racer.
Yeah. Well, we love Pete. We love Gail. And God bless him. All right. You can go to, let's see, what do we got in the plug department, Chris? You can go to amcroll.com for all the live shows. I think Kansas City is sold out. But Austin, Texas, Cap City Comedy Club coming up March 25th, 26th. Indianapolis, Helium Comedy Club, May 6th and 7th. Go to adamcroll.com for all the info. What do you got, Motor Raider?
You know, I've been driving the, I drove the Jaguar F, the F-Pace, drove the F-Type, and drove the Aston Martin Vantage that we've been talking about earlier this week on the show. So you'll find all of that on my social media at Motor Raider.
So until next time, it's Adam Carolla for Chris Dyson and Matt the Motor Raider DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes.
CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit carcastshow.com.
Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
This February on Pluto TV, we're putting the spotlight on iconic black talent. Watch your favorite movies like Top 5, 48 Hours, and More Than a Game. And drop in to binge black TV classics like The Bernie Mac Show and Moesha. Pluto TV has hundreds of channels and thousands more movies and TV shows all for free. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start watching today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.